Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
And I'm Therapist Kelly, and we have a new show title.
Yes, it's very exciting, actually. You know, sometimes you get stuck on something and you love it and you don't want to let it go, but then you go, well, we kind of have to. So we will outwardly say that we came across a bit of a trademark issue with our show title, Talk It Out, and in honor of the woman who actually owns the trademark, we have agreed to change our title. And what better than the Dr. Deborah
and Therapist Kelly show. Yes. And I changed from Coach Kelly only because I felt like I just wanted my credential out there.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be therapist. I didn't want people to think I was a life coach. So so that's why.
Not that there's anything wrong with any coaches that are
listening. No, exactly.
We want to be identified with what direction that you are attending.
Exactly.
And intending. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Awesome.
So cool.
Yeah, so it's fun and it's new. So if you are one of our loyal listeners and you're in shock because it's not Talk It Out, we still will be talking. And we're actually considering coming up with another clever name, but for now, this is our working show title.
Exactly. And I like it. I'm getting used to it.
I like it too. Some have said it might be a little too long, but you know what? It is what it is.
Exactly.
And that's right.
Well, and our phone number is still the same. It's 323-203-0815. And our new Facebook page is the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Our Twitter account is changed to Doc and Therapist. And our email is docandtherapist@gmail.com.
So and all that information will be up on the LA Talk site and our own website.
Exactly.
Which is very exciting. Yes, yes. In fact, that is. It's docandtherapist.com.
Exactly.
Simple.
Perfect. So it's easy to remember. Doc and therapist.
Great. Very exciting. So,
Oh, my God. Can we talk about what happened today?
Yes. Yeah, so the schools are closed. And did you know that they're not closed in New York and they got the exact same?
I know. It's crazy. All right. So for those of you who don't know or don't have kids or haven't heard, the LA Unified District Schools was closed today. Every single one due to a bomb threat.
Frightening.
And New York apparently had the same situation, but they discovered it was a hoax and the schools were not canceled. But my little one is waiting outside the show. So, yeah, I mean, clearly they – but I honestly would rather them be overprotective here and make sure everything is safe. And, you know, I mean, I don't know.
I agree. I'd better safe than sorry. And, you know, with all the stuff that went out in San Bernardino and, you know, you just – I don't know. It's kind of a scary world out there right now.
Exactly.
It really is. You know, now's that time of year that a lot of people talk about, you know, don't go into big malls at busy times and all that stuff. And, you know, sometimes I think I just live in bliss in my own head and I forget about that stuff. But, you know, you really got to be thoughtful about our world. Mm-hmm. It's a changed world.
I know. Well, and I wanted to address also to the parents. I'm sure a lot of people have questions about what to tell their kids when. And I want to hear your insight on this.
Absolutely.
And what I've learned is, first of all, like with my son, he didn't really ask. He was just so excited about the fact that he didn't have school. I went with it.
Ferris
I was like,
Bueller's Day Off.
Yes. Like I said, how would you like a day off? He looked at me and smiled from ear to ear. I said, great, you'll come with me. I've got to do my radio show. I've got to do some other stuff. He said, okay. He asked why it's closed. Mm-hmm. I said, well, I'm not exactly sure because I just didn't know how to handle it at that point. Mm-hmm. And he didn't ask again. Mm-hmm. And if he does ask again, I probably would say something along the lines of, you know, being vague but not scaring him too much. You know, oh, they wanted to make sure that the school was very safe. And that's it. And, you know, I think that's probably appropriate for a six-year-old. Mm-hmm. And if he asked more, you know, what does that mean? Well, they, you know, there was some current concerns that, you know, maybe some of the schools weren't exactly safe, but they were doing all that they can to make sure and everything is fine. And, you know, there's nothing to worry about. You know, I think it's easy for parents to kind of jump to conclusions or be overly dramatic with their kids. And that I just don't feel like you need to do that to get them all alarmed and have a lot of fear. And so, yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts around that.
You know, I like that. And then I also might even go a little bit more in the direction of even more neutral.
Okay.
Only because the word safe for a child, they either think of things as safe or unsafe.
Okay.
So if something wasn't quite safe, does it mean that their minds can go spinning around to, well, then it wasn't safe yesterday, or it wasn't,
that makes
it
sense.
Won't be safe tomorrow. How will we know when it's safe or not? I don't know. For anxious kids, I think that that could probably
trigger
cause
something.
A little bit more anxiety. I think for older kids, I think sharing a little bit more, especially those who are already required to watch the news and know what's going on in the news. But I'd say for the grammar school age, for sure, keeping it just kind of neutral. Maybe something even in the lines of, you know, the whole district needed to sort of repolish up their communication systems and maybe some things with the emails and things like that were not working properly. And they just wanted to make sure that, you know, all their lines of communication, because school districts need to communicate with other districts. Schools need to communicate with other schools.
Okay.
So there was a glitch in the system. I might go that way.
But
then you, then the
concern.
Tricky part is that some other kids are going to get it straight on.
That's what I'm worried about. I'm so scared that he's going to come home tomorrow and say, "Mom, so-and-so told me that there was a bomb." You know, like, what does that mean? And so that's why I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll just say, then I think you're forced to explain a little bit more.
Right, but at least you're covered then with the communication. It's like somebody communicated something and the communication system broke down and nobody was certain whether it was real or not.
Right.
So regardless of what the threat was, whether somebody said that you know, there was going to be an earthquake or whatever,
it
was something that warranted everybody joining together to try to figure it out. So then you're still not a liar. But
exactly. But it's more clear. That makes sense.
So we should ask our guest about this too when he comes on, because he's another fellow psychologist.
Absolutely.
So that would be fun. So a quick recap of last week. We did have J.P. Hansen, Find Your Bliss, and he talked about what bliss is, how to become outside the box and to live in gratitude.
Gratitude, I love that.
So
I
important.
Know. Remember, we had a really nice segment on that. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, especially during the holidays when I think everybody gets so stressed out and, you know, overwhelmed, and just kind of staying present and being grateful for what you have. I mean, I'm even trying to teach my kids that. So I had some friends over last night. It's not even Hanukkah, but somehow the Hanukkah was over, but like both couples. Yes,
Hanukkah
exactly.
Extension.
It was like a bonus.
Yeah.
So Remy says to me, "But what if I don't like the gift that they gave them?" And I said, "You know, but okay, so what if? What should we do? We say thank you anyway." And, you know, because we need to be appreciative for, you know, what people give us no matter what. And you're not always going to like everything.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he loved the gift. It was really funny. But
saved.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, we need to be in gratitude. So anyway, he was a wonderful guest. If you missed that show, it was really great.
Yes, and a great book, Find Your Bliss. All right. So this week we have a great guest. I'm so excited to have him on. And this is a topic that's dear to both of us. And this is our clinical psychologist in private practice for almost four decades. Dr. Joseph Luciani is also the author of the international best-selling self-coaching series, which has been translated into 10 different languages. An in-demand speaker and expert, Dr. Joe is featured frequently in major media, including MSNBC, CNBC, and all those other big ones. And he's been quoted in USA Today, Cosmopolitan, all the big ones. Dr. Joe resides in New Jersey with his wife of 44 years. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's great.
Oh my gosh, that is exciting. And in his spare time is an amateur paleontologist, astronomer, marathon runner, and practices yoga and meditation.
Underachiever.
So here today, we are to talk with Dr. Joe on his new book, Thin From Within, The Powerful Self-Coaching Program for Permanent Weight Loss. Boy, do we need something grounded like that. Welcome, Dr. Joe.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I just would like to add that when you mentioned astronomy as a hobby, I was just writing a blog today that with next week being the lowest light day of the year, December 21st, that the only people that rejoice in the darkness are astronomers. So there you go.
Right, exactly. Right. There's the silver lining, you know, with the darkness. The astronomers are happy.
Hey, we do definitely want to drop into your book because that's why you're here today. But because of this big news out here in LA, do you work with children at all?
I don't. I do work with parents and who get quite anxious. I was listening in on what you were saying. I totally agree. I think less is more.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially with children that are prone toward anxiety, oftentimes, as you know, we see anxiety that runs in families, and whether that's a predisposition or nature-nurture is another argument. But I do think that an anxious parent needs to be particularly careful not to exude too much
yeah.
in an attempt to placate the child, that parent might just go on for 20 minutes saying why it's so safe. And in the meantime, getting the child, of course, so worked up that mm-hmm. why is mommy so rattled by this being so unsafe? So sometimes less is more. And when it comes to rearing children, what we model is very important.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, we just wanted to get your information since
yes.
you are also a psychologist, so
yes.
you have good insights. Thank you for that. Okay, so we want to hear more about this book and what prompted you to write Thin from Within?
Well, two things. One, I've been curious as to why seemingly well-disciplined people, especially clients I work with, who want to lose weight, who find themselves overweight, or even as a kind of a reaction to a depression or anxiety, find themselves gaining weight. I wanted to know why these seemingly disciplined people who can do other things, run marathons, go to the gym, and yet keep packing on the weight. What was it that they could be disciplined in one area and not another? So the question as to why there was such difficulty with the self-discipline involved in eating was something that had me curious. And I wanted to be able to offer at least some insights into that with the people I work with. But more personally, it had to do with a blocked artery that I had, and my cardiologist gave me an option of either having a stent put in or to really radically change my lifestyle. So I, being rather well-disciplined at heart, I chose to go the route of changing my lifestyle, which was already rather, I think, healthy. Mm-hmm. But I went hardcore. I went to just about a total vegan diet. And that's,
wow.
you know, no meat, no eggs, no just fruit and vegetables.
Oh, my God.
And also wheat, because my triglycerides became a problem also. So I'm saying literally fruit and vegetables.
Oh, my God.
So those first few months, uh-huh. and for those many first few months, I struggled intensely with cravings, with desires, and I had to learn to cope, and I had to really take a look at what was going on inside of me, what it would take and what it was going to take in order to formulate the self-discipline necessary to really retrain me and retrain my brain into really accepting a totally new lifestyle. So it was the personal as well as the professional that led me to want to write this book to help others mm-hmm. who really have had difficulty with yo-yo dieting either once or twice or all their lives, and to really get to a place what I call weight mastery. And if I may, just one startling study, it was done in England, that by the age 45, the average adult woman has been on 61 diets.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
To me, that's just flabbergasting.
Well, okay,
wow.
So and we're both authors, Dr. Deborah and I, and so we know how difficult it is to get published, but I know even harder how it is with diet and weight loss books because there's so many out there. So I guess my question to you is, how do you feel your book is different?
Well, it's essentially, Thin from Within isn't a diet book at all. In fact, it's meant to be a companion to any diet of your choice. It doesn't really matter which path you're on in terms of your dietary path, because Thin from Within isn't about the how-to, it's the why you do. It's the reason why you're eating, and it's the reason why you can't commit yourself to the intentions that you set out for yourself. So Thin from Within, from the onset, is really not meant to tell you what to eat or what mm-hmm. meals to prepare, but it's really getting you to go the distance in terms of actualizing the intentions that you have for yourself. And that's, I think, what makes it stand out and perhaps even made it a little bit easier to get published, because it really is the first of its kind to not be really dealing with diet and weight loss in a dietary weight loss fashion, if you will.
I see. Okay.
So it's kind of like a new relationship to yourself, which happens to also deal with your relationship to food.
Exactly, because, you know, basically we tend to identify ourselves by oftentimes, and unfortunately, by our failures. People that are overweight generally have struggled, a good portion of their lives with weight issues. And, I've wound up with, looking at themselves and labeling themselves as loser and I can't and, I'm just not able to. So we get into all of these kind of self, just beating ourselves up in so many different ways. So I think that the relationship with ourselves has to change in a sense that we develop what I call psychological resiliency. We need to go from feeling impotent to empowered. And I think that that's the path that is necessary, regardless of whether, you look at yourself as someone who really hasn't been able to, or you don't see yourself as someone who is strong and empowered to handle the struggles and the urges and the compulsions, to really change that whole script and allow you to start experiencing yourself in a much more, I think, resilient way, a way that incorporates optimism as opposed to pessimism, tenacity, perseverance, all those things that have been absent in your life, we're able to put that together and develop a kind of muscle, which we call psychological resiliency.
I love that.
Me too.
It's so positive.
I like
that
too.
So empowering. Absolutely. Quickly, you talk about the three enemies to weight loss and weight mastery. Can you help our listeners know what those are?
Yeah, that came from Sun Tzu's dialogue of know your enemies. That's where I got the concept of the enemies. But when it comes to weight loss, we definitely have three enemies. And, the first are circumstances. The adverse circumstances of our life, whether it be a difficult day at the job or the frustrations of child rearing, frustrations and circumstances can really bring us to our knees emotionally. So the first enemy is adverse circumstances. We need to have an understanding of what's impinging on us on a day-to-day basis. The second is emotional, adverse or toxic emotions. So we have bad circumstances, toxic emotions. That could be anything from anxiety. You mentioned the stress of what's going on today in California. So stressful emotions can lead us to the pantry. And the third are habits, the habituated patterns that we fall prey to, eating in front of the TV, having a glass of wine, which enables us to kind of forget about our intentions while we eat, eating to kind of just gain some kind of anesthetic feeling because of those frayed emotions. These go-to habits need to be scrutinized. So I usually say to people, just develop that as your checklist prior to any eating. Ask yourself, what are the circumstances right now? What are my emotions right now? And what habits are presenting themselves at this moment? That kind of orients you in a way to start staying mindful before the fact, before that fork ever reaches your mouth.
I like that. It's very practical.
Yeah.
Right? It's something that sounds like something that's very doable for people.
Absolutely. I love also you talk about the three-step technique called self-talk. Can you talk a little bit about that? I think that's so important.
Yeah, self-talk is something I developed about 10 years ago. I've written about it in some of my other books. I've modified it in order to help us deal with the cravings and compulsive urges of weight loss and weight mastery. But it has to do with really understanding that there are many ways we sabotage ourselves. And when it comes to mindless eating, this is one of the most prevalent. So self-talk is a way of, first of all, getting into your own head and restructuring the thoughts that support destructive eating. The first step is to separate facts from fictions. For example, we might say, oh, I can't do that, it's too hard. Well, the question is that a fact or a fiction? The fact that you feel you can't or you feel it's too hard, well, feelings aren't facts. And you need to start recognizing that there are many ways that you might develop fictions that until you shed the light of consciousness on them, these fictions might be what rules your destiny. So it's important first to separate facts from fictions. Then with the second step, we're really talking about getting in touch with that runaway train of compulsivity. Once these thoughts get up ahead of steam, then, of course, it's very, very difficult to dig your heels in and kind of extricate yourself from going down that path. But with the second step, we have some techniques. techniques, and some of them are visualizations. But conceptually, it's really a matter of recognizing that you don't want to go from thought A to thought B to thought C. You know, before you know it, you're running the alphabet with all these thoughts. And what you really want to do is you want to catch yourself when you start to get into destructive thinking. You want to catch yourself early, and you want to be able to find a way to say no. Mm-hmm. And saying no, of course, is something that is entailed in almost every weight loss effort. And I think it's very important to recognize that the ability to say no, or self-discipline itself, is really needs to be looked at as a muscle. Just because you may not feel self-disciplined, which is not a fact but a fiction, it doesn't mean that you can't become disciplined. It only means that you need to recognize that if we look at it as a muscle, then your muscle is atrophied. You need to get some reps in. You need to get some exercise. So there are various exercises throughout the book to help you develop that one success at a time, one thought at a time. But we do need to develop a self-discipline muscle. There's no other way that you're going to handle the friction, the intense emotional friction involved with wanting what you want when you want it. There's no way you're going to handle that unless you have the self-discipline muscle to prevent you from going down that path. And the third step is really the capacity to just let go and get beyond the struggle, to really step away from and liberate yourself from the compulsivity in general. And it's really a matter of developing a kind of separation from the thinking and the torment, and that is something that can be accomplished in not so much a meditative sense, but in a clarity sense, bringing your intentions to the fore, taking that deep breath, mindfulness. All these things work to ultimately get you to a point of liberation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to the new, revised Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. And we have on air with us today Dr. Joseph Luciani, who is describing many elements of his very powerful book called Thin From Within, the Powerful Self-Coaching Program for Permanent Weight Loss. If you have a question, feel free to call us at 323-203-0815. Wow, really good stuff, Kelly. I know you've got a question.
Yeah,
there.
No, you know, I just, if it's okay with you, Dr. Joe, I'd love to read this part. It's on 167 of your book. You talk about letting go and risking self-trust, and you give a couple examples. I just think this would be really helpful for our listeners. You know, I think a lot of times we have these thoughts in our head and, of course, worries and anxiety. And so you give an example of, what if I can't pay the bills this month? And you say, let go by turning to your maturity and insisting, I will do everything in my power to ensure that I will be responsible. I'll do my best. That's all I can do. Therefore, I'm going to let go and trust that somehow I'll handle this crisis. And, you know, you give another example, like, I dread going for that root canal, which is really funny because I have to get a crown and I've canceled my appointment once and I'm terrified. And I love reading this because you say, let go by recognizing that anticipating discomfort is a projection of fear. I've had other root canals and some were absolutely no problem. No sense trying to brace myself for something that may turn out okay. I'm going to let go and just show up for that important appointment. I'll deal with how to handle it then, not now. So can you speak a little bit to you know, that chapter and your thoughts around that?
Well, I think self-trust is so pivotal in just about all of our psychological health. And I think that once you are able to believe in you, you know, whether it comes through the developing an awareness of self-discipline, the capacity to handle life in a mature way and responsible way, once we have self-trust, it's very easy then to go to the next step towards hopefulness, towards optimism. Optimism is a fundamentally important energizer for the psyche. And in order to cultivate optimism, I think it's very important to recognize those things that impede our progress. The pessimist, for example, wants to be pessimistic, not intentionally, of course, but the reason pessimism can become so prevalent when we come up against things that are challenging is because the pessimist is trying to prevent running into collisions. If I can't do that, if I get negative, I'm almost giving myself excuses. I'm bailing out early. I can't do it. It's too hard. So pessimism is the breaking effect that really deters from getting to our goals, whereas optimism is the gas pedal. With optimism, with hopefulness, with with self-trust, what we're really doing is we're really fortifying ourselves to believe that we can. And I'm not sure if either one of you have ever done hypnosis, but if you believe you can, it's incredible what you can accomplish.
Yeah.
So we really need to retrain our minds. We really do. From getting away from the passivity and the negativity of just destructive eating to the empowered position of determining exactly who and how you want to live your life, who you want to be. And I think what's very important is that we realize that mature eating, and I know this doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but mature eating, adult eating, is very different from child eating. Do you remember when we were kids, we all liked those gooey desserts and candies?
Oh, yeah.
Well, but, you know, what did your parents say? Your parents said, stop, that's enough.
Yeah.
So you needed that parental guidance to know that enough was enough. Sometimes we grow up and we haven't become our own parent to our destructive childlike eating. We still want those gooey desserts. We don't want to have to say no. We don't want to experience the friction of not having what we want. So sometimes I differentiate between mature adult eating and child eating, and that helps. Just asking yourself, right now, how am I eating, or what is my desire? Does it sound childlike to me, or does it sound like a mature? When you find yourself whining and complaining, it's oftentimes very childlike whining and complaining. Mm-hmm. So listen to yourself whenever you want that gooey bar of chocolate.
No, for Kelly, it's the gooey bar of
dark chocolate. And I don't have that discipline. I love, but you know what? Thank God, a little bit goes a long way. I have a square or two a day of the 85%, and that, you know, that satisfies me. It's really great.
I just had a square before I got on the phone.
Isn't it the best?
I absolutely agree.
Well, once you become used to that, the milk just, it's just too sweet. It tastes like a pixie stick.
Yeah. You know, I just to add to this a little bit, because Kelly and I are both very self-disclosing on these shows, and she and I have both had a form of an eating disorder. Mine was pretty severe in high school and my young adulthood with anorexia and bulimia. And I have to tell you that one of the core underpinnings of the eating disorder was this total sense of shame that I just wasn't good enough as I am in any shape, way, or form. And it didn't matter whether I was 89 pounds or if I had been 250 pounds, it wouldn't have mattered because I hated myself no matter what. So I certainly could have used this book because it really all was focused on food and the power that food had and how it could, you know, ruin my life and hurt me. And it never really occurred to me at that time that it was my power to change that was really well within my reach, within myself. So I think that...
You know, I just in terms of body image and the dysmorphic feelings we have about being overweight, I feel it's very important that when someone looks at themselves in the mirror and they're just disgusted, it's very important to say to that person, now, wait a second, you may not like what you've become at this moment, but you need to realize that that you are inviolate, that person you're seeing now isn't really who you are. It's a snapshot. And a snapshot that if you want to be different, if you want to work on that and develop some self-esteem and good feelings, then you're going to start moving not as a snapshot that just doesn't change, but as a streaming video. So who you are is someone who's becoming. Your intentions need to be front and center. So if you have a hard time getting your energy up, your enthusiasm up, your optimism up because you don't like what you're seeing right now, well, you need to develop that very personal feeling that who you are is okay in this moment. And who you are is, in this moment, changing in the next. So it's the change that's important. It's the path that you're on. And that's why I think it's important that you don't, see yourself in any negative way, because we want to always encourage, not discourage, the evolution of weight mastery.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And just healing all that shame.
Oh.
And it's just, it's tough, but it's doable. I think, too, a lot of people need to do a lot of work with their childhood issues as well in order to be able to embrace all this stuff. Can you speak to that a little bit? I'm sure you do that kind of deep work with people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing is that we are imprinted by our experiences. The person we are today is the end result, the aggregate result of all those experiences that have transpired up to that point. And with food, of course, everyone has heard the term comfort food. You know, these are the foods that have left an imprint on us, and we tend to go to those foods, especially when our enemies, circumstances, circumstances, emotions, and habits are at play, and we tend to look for the solace and an aesthetic feeling and the sometimes self-medicating things that comes from our go-to comfort foods. And comfort foods are particularly dangerous because they become very mindless, very reflexive. And this is why, you know, we need to shed the light of awareness onto these habits and patterns of our life, and especially in those areas where we are most susceptible. Yeah. You know, comfort food is, you know, if you even see a picture of comfort food or the smell, take Cinnabon at the malls or something, it actually evokes the same dopamine response in the brain as actually tasting that food. So these foods have very strong effects on us, food in general. But you see, when food is used as a means of feeling better, of sustaining our emotions, then we're developing a dependency with food that really has to be challenged.
Well, it's so funny. When you were talking about comfort food, I literally zoned out for about, I don't know, 15 seconds, thought about macaroni and cheese, and was like happy. And then literally that second, you're like, it can actually, just thinking about it, create that dopamine. I'm like, yes, it can. Like, I was happy for like 15 seconds thinking about mac and cheese. It was really funny.
You know, mind tasting actually, you know, it's a physiological event. Your saliva, your gastric acid, mm-hmm. your insulin, blood sugar, fatty acids, all of that is increased just by, that's why we're so susceptible to advertising. When we see something on TV and, mm-hmm. and we're passing the big arches of McDonald's, it's very, very difficult because you're actually now having those associations which are causing the physical reactions as if you were actually ingesting those foods.
It's amazing.
Yeah, not to mention all the chemicals and additives on so many of those foods that people crave. It also, it's like, you know, my former addiction to Diet Coke. I mean, I'm sure that there was stuff in there that just left me just when I didn't have one. I wanted one so badly. Kelly knows that I am now 4 months into no Diet Coke, which is my
incredible.
Did you know that a Big Mac hamburger takes about 3 days to digest, and the trans fats in those greasy burgers takes 51 days to digest?
Are you kidding me?
Well, remember Morgan Spurlock did that whole thing about outing the fast food industry and how it can completely just decimate the insides of our bodies. Frightening stuff.
It really, well, it's scary because, I always vowed before I had kids, I will not be taking them to McDonald's. I mean, this was like, I'm a health nut. Like, this was, you know, and the sad part is, I mean, my kids are going like once a week now. And it's very sad because, you know, on the weekends, they're hungry. They're just used to it. It's horrible. And I mean, my older one is so picky, but, you know, I mean, thank God at least McDonald's has gotten healthier. Like he'll buy it. Like they have cuties sometimes, those tangerines. So I'll get some of those. You know, they've got the apple slices. I mean, so it's like at least they're implementing more healthy stuff, but it scares me still.
Actually, in almost every fast food place, because sometimes I'm on the go and I won't eat any fast food hardly ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look, there are healthier choices.
Options,
except for, again, all the salt and the extra stuff that they put in. Curiously, Dr. Joe, did you stay a vegan or did you just...
Yes.
You did?
No, I was wondering the same thing. I'm dying to know.
Well, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I am now evolved into what I guess I would call it, from what I read, a pescatarian. I do eat fish occasionally, but that's it. I'll have maybe a salmon or a nice cold water fish once a week. But yes, fruits, vegetables, and that occasional piece of fish.
Wow. Oh, okay. Yeah, I primarily eat fruits.
You know, and I'm so glad you brought that up because you know what? I'm sorry I failed to tell you this, that after a certain period of time, I really got beyond the desires, the cravings. I don't have those. I would go to tailgates with my brother-in-law and watch them put on the short ribs on the grill and the hamburgers and the hot dogs. Wow. I don't miss them. Not that they wouldn't taste good. I mean, a Chateaubriand would taste wonderful, but I'm neutral. I don't have any inclination. Mm-hmm. So over time, what happens is that not only do your tastes change, but your mind really does change. Now, it's hard to believe. I'm a former cigarette smoker from way back, and I never thought I'd ever not care to have a cigarette again, but it took me 2 years, but it just went away.
Wow.
So you can get to the other side of that fence. That's what I call weight mastery, when it's no longer a struggle, when there's no longer friction, and that's really what Thin From Within is about. I mean, you really need to change you from the inside out.
Right.
Yeah, and I will attest to that as well, because I am a former smoker. It's been 15 years now, and I would say that maybe once every 2 years or something in a group of friends where maybe a couple people are still smoking,
yeah.
and, you know, that having a glass of wine and a cigarette kind of thing will stir up the memory of some fondness of connection.
Uh-huh.
But that's what I do to sort of remind myself. It's not about the cigarette. It's about I'm really craving some of that sort of close, ooey-gooey feeling that girls will have together sometimes.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that shows up for me. And also, I have now, I'm 2.5 years without meat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
Really?
Christopher is, thanks. Well, I don't know. I mean, mine was more philosophical reasons as opposed to health reasons. Christopher, he hasn't eaten meat in about 35 years, I think.
Oh, my. Wait, do you eat chicken? Is that considered?
Well, I occasionally eat turkey, more so now just because it's easy. It's hard in a restaurant, and he will too. But mostly fish. We have fish most of the time. And fruits and vegetables. I mean, that is... That's the way, and you just feel better, and
you
it
do.
Tastes better, and food tastes better.
Yeah.
And I love vegetables. Like I can actually, you know, how most people will eat their like the goodies first, like the mashed potatoes or the whatever. If I even eat those, hardly ever. I will always eat my vegetables first because if I'm going to get full, I want to get full on something that I really love.
That's so funny.
I totally get what you're saying, Dr. Joe. Now, Kelly, you're a really healthy eater, but you eat from all food groups.
I primarily, I'm the same, like a pescatarian, I would say also.
Okay.
I mean, I was vegetarian for 18 years, and then I got anemic, and so I started introducing a little bit of meat, and then when I was pregnant, it was, like, scary. I craved red meat. It was like, I don't even know who I am. I got a hot dog from a movie theater. It was, like, so gross, but I was, like, craving it. And then I stopped, and now I'm pretty much fish, and then same, vegetables, and I mean, I like healthy food, thank God. I mean, I feel bad for people who don't, because it's easy for me. It's like, that's what I you know, want to eat. My husband, on the other hand, is like the opposite. It's like, if it's healthy, he like runs. You know, he's
actually a vegetable aversive, right?
I mean, like if it's on a hamburger, maybe like a tomato. but yeah, it's hard.
Hey, Dr. Joe, we have an email we'd like to get your input on.
Sure.
Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, I know you're having Dr. Joseph Luciani on today. I've struggled with my weight all my life. I lose weight, then I gain it back and more. I can't pinpoint why I eat, which I think is my first step in this battle. How can I assess what is really eating me? My life feels somewhat in control. I have a healthy marriage and one child. Please help.
Well, as I mentioned when we first started, you know, the amount of diets that someone goes on, that concept of yo-yo dieting, I think it's 85% of all diets within 2 years eventually fail. Over 5 years, 95% eventually fail, and you will regain the weight, if not more. So this person isn't alone. Why is that? Well, because when you're on a diet, the only thing that changes, presumably, is your weight.
Mm-hmm.
Unless your mind changes, you will be part of that statistic, that 80 to 95% statistic. So the absolute truth, and you know, as much as some people don't want to have to wrestle or grapple with it, is the fact that unless you change your mind, then most diets will in fact fail over and over again. I always like to say it's a matter of mind over mouth. And you know, when I first started writing this book, my former agent did not want to take the book on because she said to me, you know what, it's a nice concept, but I don't think people really want to do what they have to do to lose weight. I think people want quick fixes. They want magic. And she turned it down.
Wow.
And I said, you know what, I disagree with you. I think that we're, as a society, I think we're getting fed up, and no pun intended, with the ongoing diet after diet after diet. And I think people are ready to realize that there really can be a permanent solution, but you've got to be mature about it, you've got to be responsible, and you've got to be an adult about it.
Yes, so true. Yeah, that's that whole inner relationship with food and changing that. Yeah, it's funny that you talk about this. The yo-yo dieting wonder of the world is Oprah. Are you going to have a personal coaching session with her and give her this book?
Oh, that's a question? I didn't realize that was, is that an email?
No, that's not part of the email. That's just a question.
You know, that is very humorous. I would certainly counsel Oprah, but I doubt that Oprah would be receptive to wanting to talk about her weight with me. But
you never know.
Anyone else, I would certainly realize that, you know, look, we all, you know, we were born to avoid pain and seek pleasure. It's part of who we are as human beings. There's no question that certain foods become especially the highly palatable foods, the sugary, fatty, starchy foods, you know, they're challenging. And they're challenging because they do give us pleasure. And when I say they give us pleasure, I'm talking about the same pleasure you get in the parts of the brain that like cocaine and heroin, our dopamine centers. The pleasure centers of the brain just light up with these foods. So we all know that it is a struggle to not want to just be happy all the time. And this is the struggle, the discomfort, the friction involved with really living according to our intentions. But as we just discussed previously, with cigarette smoking, with diet, it's really a matter of getting beyond the point of struggle. And there is that point, and I really think that it's important for everyone to realize that you're going to have to accept the notion that there's going to be discomfort. Now, if you run from that, hide from that, deny that, then you're going to go down the yo-yo highway. But if you're willing to accept some discomfort and put in its place a program where you're going to start really working on your mind to really change your relationship with food, then you have a chance, a real chance, of living your whole life through without going through these struggles over and over again. You know, it's wonderful to go for the beach body or the wedding or the extrinsic rewards, but it's the intrinsic, ultimately, that really puts us in a position to really solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. One of the worst things that comes out of many of my, because I have worked in eating disorders for so long, is when mostly women say this, well, I'll do that when. You know, when I lose the 5 pounds, then I'll wear the bathing suit. When I lose this, which is a total self-annihilation and a complete lack of self-acceptance, and it just pains my heart when people say that, because there's no way to move from that.
Exactly.
Because your body and your mind is going to rebel because of, am I only acceptable if I do this? Oh. Well, then screw you.
Right, exactly.
You know, it creates an internal war.
That makes so much sense,
You know, I call those quasi-facts. I talked before about separating facts from fictions. You know, the quasi-facts are those fuzzy areas where, well, I'm going to eat that now and I'll start running tomorrow, or I'll go to the gym tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be true and it could be a rationalization.
Yeah.
What I say is whenever it's a quasi-fact, whenever it's anything that supports you going against your intentions, call it a fiction.
Yeah,
I like it.
I want to know your thoughts about, because something that helped me when I was going through my eating disorder is I went to a nutritionist who specialized in intuitive eating, because I literally had so much rigidity around my eating, so many rules. I couldn't eat after 7. I could only eat salads, no dressing. You know, there were so many rules and restrictions. And so I kind of had to unlearn all of that and really kind of relearn how to eat normally. And so she was kind of this big proponent of intuitive eating and really listening to what I felt like. But because for so long it was like I wanted pizza, but it was like, no, I cannot have that. That's not a diet food and that kind of thing. So I kind of want to know your thoughts around that.
Well, I like the concept. It's kind of a Zen way of approaching food. But I think you have to first clear away the distortions, because then you'll get yourself confused with calling my feeling for a chocolate mousse as opposed to, as you might call that, a legitimate intuition as opposed to a distortion. So I think it's important to first become mindful of those intentions. And once you have the intention solid, you know, then I think it's a matter of finding what works for you. Mm-hmm. Now, I typically work from just about lunchtime, about 1 o'clock, till about 10:30, 11 at night. So I eat my supper at 11 o'clock at night, which is not the best thing to do because we tend to burn fat differently at night. But it's come to work for me. So I guess I've come down to realize that if your intentions are solid and you are living according to those intentions, your body tends to adapt over time to the regime that works best for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important always to realize that we have 150,000 different ways to really kind of sabotage ourselves with our thinking, our rationalizations, our denials. And we really need to be in touch with the clarity of thinking that's important to really just be able to let your body almost speak to you. I like intuition. intuition. I think it's very important in terms of just being mindful of how you eat and chewing your food. You know, it takes 20 minutes for the brain to realize it's actually had food in your belly.
Yeah.
So people that are wolfing down food and just, you know, the hunger chemicals that reach the hypothalamus take time to get there. Slow down. Drink some water in between. Give your brain a chance to realize it's satisfied. You know, there are many things you can do to just start living more naturally with yourself from the inside out, but I think it comes with a consciousness.
In some ways, this is where society has done women a service, because we're taught as little girls that it's, you know, it's unattractive to hoard your food and wolf down your food. So we're taught a more gentle and slower approach to eating generally, whereas so many men just pigs.
Oh my God, just
cavemen pigs. It's like, are you in a hurry? There's no fire alarms going off right now. You know, we can hang out here for an extra 10 minutes. It's so funny.
Have you ever heard of the French paradox? It's why the French people as a culture tend to be relatively thin collectively as opposed to Americans. And they actually did some studies and found that the French are much more in tune with the inner cues, the inner sensations of hunger and satiety, than Americans, who are much more driven by externals. So we don't pay enough attention to the process of eating, to the experiences of eating. The portions in France compared to the portions in this country. My cousin owned a restaurant up here in the Poconos in Pennsylvania, and he took pride in the fact that his business was based solely on the fact that no one could eat their whole meal and everyone needed a doggy bag. People just like to eat a lot, and that's part of our conditioning and culture.
It's so funny you said that. It's so funny you said that about the portions, because I actually studied in Paris for 6 months, and the portions were so small compared to what I was used to. And I remember I got a frozen meal, and it finally looked like normal size, and I was so excited. And then I read on the box, it says pour deux, meaning for two. And I'm like, of course, that would make sense, you know, like it's for two people, it's not for one. So I always think about that. I mean, especially in Chinese restaurants, I remember going in a Chinese restaurant in Paris, and she brought out the portion, and I'm like, okay, this is half? Like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, but yeah, we are so conditioned.
Yeah, and we really don't need that much
food.
No,
we don't.
Dr. Joe, we're about to run out of time, but before we do, since it is so rare to talk to somebody in person who's had a 44-year marriage and still climbing, can you share one secret as to how you've managed to keep that alive?
Well, let me say that we dated 11 years before we were married. We're high school sweethearts.
Aww.
And I can only say that it was because my wife had the insight and intuition to realize that what was underneath a very immature, jealous 14-year-old was there was some potential in there. She Aww. Stuck with me. She's been a great support, a great friend. And I would say, ultimately, I just feel just blessed. It was kind of serendipity. I found this one person in life who I could spend 10 lifetimes with and never feel alone in my ever imagining. So I'm just quite blessed with her.
So
her name is Karen.
Oh,
so sweet. That's a beautiful way to end. You have been a fabulous guest.
Yes.
Thank you so much. So tell everybody where and when they can get the book, Thin From Within, the Powerful Self-Coaching Program for Permanent Weight Loss. Where can they find it?
I just found out that it was supposed to come out January 1st, but Amazon is now selling it. So it's at Amazon.com. It will be available in other bookstores come January 1st. And if anyone wants to reach me, I have a free website with forms, etc. It's www.selfcoaching.net.
Fantastic.
Beautiful. Oh, thank you so
much. You were so wonderful.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for all the great insight. So next
well,
week.
You.
Yes. Okay.
Thanks.
So yeah, next week. So next week. What's that?
Sorry,
Dr. Joe. So next week, Kelly is going to be where? Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be back freezing on the East Coast to visit my family with my kids. So I will not be here because it's the winter break for both my kids.
Okay.
So you have a special guest.
Yes. So one of our former guests who was on air with us a while back when, again, you were out of town, but Jack Saul, who is a MFT, he's a marriage family therapist. He also specializes in eating disorders. And we have a book, which I failed to bring the title up to name, but there will be a book on, I think the book's title is called My Fat Dad, and it's a memoir about this woman who grew up in, so we're sort of like a little bit of a theme here.
That's
And he's an eating disorder specialist, Jack Saul, so that'll be awesome. Yeah. And anybody wants to check out our new website, it is a little bit under construction, but we're getting there, and please go visit us at docandtherapist.com. The and is with an A-N-D, doc. D-O-C and therapist.com, and it's up and running, and what a great show. Have a great trip.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll miss you.
Kelly, I'll miss you too.
Right, and I'll see you guys the week after.
That's right. All That's right. All right.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.